Hi, it's another Friday on the IBM TV. This is Mind Closet 101, where all issues have been discussed. Today it's 2nd of October 2020, a special day, special month as well. So I say welcome to all our viewers. If this is your first time watching Mind Closet 101 on the IBM TV, this program is called Mind Closet 101. You're welcome. I am your host, Bram Wachinemelu, but if Wachinemelu is difficult, you can call me Michael. Now, welcome. Today's going to be exciting because I'm having a special guest. And I have also part of the IBM TV family that will be joining us. So today we'll be talking really about disability turned around. And the topic is, what's your excuse? What's your excuse that you can't get things done? What's your excuse that you can't be you? What's your excuse that you can't fulfill your purpose in life? What is your excuse that you really can play a good role in this planet Earth? Welcome. Today, if you check your time, is 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's also 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I'm saying good morning to all our viewers in the U.S., Canada, Jamaica, Cuba, Mexico, and Peru. It is 2 p.m. West African time and also 3 p.m. Central African time. So I'm saying good afternoon to all my West African brothers and sisters, and also to Botswana, Burundi, Egypt, Libya, Rwanda, and South Africa. In Nigeria, I'm from the Igbo tribe, so Nsigi, Ndewo, Nana. So it's also 6:30 p.m. Indian Standard Time. So I'm saying good evening. Namaste to all Asia. This is Mind Closet 101, where we discuss life issues. And remember, our slogan is, he that is perfect, be the first to cast the stone. Judge not, so you shall not be judged. All right, today I have an African story to share, but in the meantime, I think I'll start introducing my guest one by one. Starting first with, he's an attorney, a legal advisor, attorney, National Labor Relations Board from 1993 to 1999. He's a senior associate, Crupien Greenbaum and O'Brien LLC from 2000 to 2001. He's a coordinator, Democratic New Hampshire Coordinator Committee, 2002 to 2002. That's November 2000 to December 2002. He's the coordinator. He was its coordinator, Democratic. I've said that, sorry. Deputy director, the Institute of Politics, Democrat, and the Internet from 2001 to 2003. Deputy state director, Howard Dean for America, 2003 to 2004. National Advance Team, Kerry Edwards Presidential Campaign, March 2004 to November 2004, General Counsel, Law Offices of William F. Trezevant, 2005 to 2010, Chief of Staff to the Chancellor, University of Wilson-Pettville, 2010 to 2012, Attorney, Law Offices of William Trezevant, 2013 to 2018, Special Counselor and Confident Advisor, Upstate New York Labor District Council, 2018 to 2020, having six honors and awards to achievement, Black Law Student Association Leadership Award, Citizen of the Year Civics Leadership Award, John L. Hargrave Award, Law Faculty Outstanding Achievement Award, Philip Little Award for Scholarship and Leadership, Student Bar Association Leadership Award, He is IBM TV Washington correspondent, the host of American Politics, Swing State Stories, Supreme Court Special Report. He's also a senior producer on the IBM TV all the way from Washington, D.C. I present Bill Trzebit. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good evening. And thank good you. Evening. It's an honor to be on your show. I appreciate it. How are you today?
I'm good. And you?
Good. Good. Hanging in. So.
Yeah. Good to have you. Good to have you on our show. I know it's morning your time, but yes. Thank you for just giving me this opportunity to have you here. Thank you. Another IBM family, member of the family, IBM of the family. He's an on-air personality, musical producer and promoter, radio host, public speaker, creative writer. In 1995 to 2006, he is an on-air personality, yes, WNCU, North Carolina Central University, volunteer and announcer, Troca Music Festival from 2006 to 2011. Under the Haiti Heritage Center, he's the blues announcer for Boo Johan Blues Festival, 1998 till now. Creator and planning committee for Haiti Film Festival, 1994 to date. Site coordinator, 1993 to date. Current team leader, Measurement Incorporated, 1999 to date. He's a consultant and past editor, Spectacular Magazine, 2003 to date. Blues announcer for Duke Joint, 2007 to date. Co-producer, Artistry Festi Entertainment, 2011 to date. Announcer, Durham's Arts Council, Centerfest, 2012 to date. Host of Amateur Nights of the Haiti's Next Level Veterans, 2014 to date. Remote Scorer, Measurement Incorporated, 2014 to date. Is the host, Straight Talk with Dane and Mark, former Voice of the People, Blog Talk Radio, 2014 to date. He's a communist in the Durham News, 2015 to date. He's the host of the Radio with Mark Lee on the IBM TV. Also an executive producer on the IBM TV, all the way from North Carolina. His name is Mark Lee. Hello, boss.
How you doing? Glad to see you here. You know, lots going on in the world today. So I know Bill's been watching the news and seeing that we've having major news here in the nation. So a lot of things are happening.
Right. Yeah. Right. We also have, she was formerly a guest, but still not a guest. She's now part of the IBM family. She's an Amazon bestseller, journalist, author, motivational speaker, podcaster, a blogger, content creator, independent consultant, teacher, educationist, and an entrepreneur. She has bachelor degree in journalism and bachelor of arts in mass communication, media studies, both degrees, Ashford University, associate of arts in journalism at the Academy of Art University. She has a lot of books selling fast on the Amazon, like I Win, The View, and other inspirational books. She also has five podcast shows, Axe Win, Artwork for CP Podcast, just to mention a few. All right. Despite she was born with cerebral palsy, she has defied the odds of by achieving everything she ever wanted. She toured the country speaking to schools and institutions to raise awareness about cerebral palsy and living a full life no matter what holds you back. She's also an advocate of veterans across the world, and her mission is to help others with physical and mental disability to find their voices and passion through written or spoken word using today's accessible technologies as needed. She speaks Spanish, English, and she's part of the IBM TV today. Her name is Wynn Kelly Charles. Hi, Wynn.
Hi, you guys. I am just here to support the main guest, Maxwell Ivy. You guys are going to be, I guess I would say about Max, you guys you think I'm my inspiration? Well, you're about to be another inspiration. So I decided to come be a panelist this morning, and I will let Buzzer take it away on Max, and we'll have fun.
Great. Thank you for joining us. Today, I'm about to celebrate someone that is unique. At the age of 5, he started losing his sight. Was pronounced wiggly blind by 12 and totally blind after graduation from college. Growing up in a family of carnival owners, all he wanted to do was to continue in his father's and grandfather's footsteps and be part of the family business. He did help in the business over the years, but couldn't sustain it after the early death of his father, who died to lung cancer. He then turned helping people sell their amusement equipment on his website. This led him into blogging, which turned his life around when he discovered his talent and purpose in life. He's a blogger, award winner, inspirational self-author, motivational speaker, podcast talent agent. Yes, he helped me on my last show, and a podcast host. If I Can Do It, Then What's Your Excuse? That's the name of his podcast. His name is Maxwell Ivy Jr. And they call him the blind blogger. Hi, Max.
Hey, I'm Michael. I like it. You know, for people who have not watched or listened to my show, this, you know, basically whatever happens is better than what I planned to happen. It's always the way we do it at What's Your Excuse. So I love the introductions. I love hearing great things from my friend Wynn, who personally inspires me all the time. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think that this beginning segment is a reminder of one very important lesson I've learned over the years. Never compare yourself to other people.
Great.
Always focus on what you're doing and where you're at in your journey, because after listening to the introductions of all the other panelists, if I were somebody who got into comparisons, I would be thinking, why the hell am I here? You know, but I know why I'm here. I'm here because I could have quit. I could have just been happy doing nothing and maybe watching TV, or listening to it. But because I show up every day, I've become an inspiration, and I'm looking forward to having fun, as Wynn said.
Yeah, good to have you on our show. For those watching us for the first time, this is Mind Closet 101. Like I said, Mind Closet 101 is a live coaching show that gives people the platform to ask questions that have been locked in the closet of their minds. Also, a 101 avenue for people to freely interact and express their inner thoughts without being judged, where everyone can learn from different experiences, opinions, not only permitted to talk about our victories, successes, but also our failures, mistakes, and burden. So you're welcome. All problems are the illusions of the mind. If you're perfect, be the first to cast the stone. Judge not, and you shall not be judged. I'm going to skip the African story for today, probably another time. But for those joining us, please feel free to comment on the comment section on our Facebook page, Mind Closet 101, the IBM TV Facebook page. You can also follow me on all social media handles, Brown Watching MLU, exactly how it is on the screen on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Comment, talk more about it. You can also send us your own experience and stories, which we will share on one of our live shows on the IBM TV. So welcome. Now, Max, over to you. Now, I have Bill and I have Mark, two great producers. The floor is open down to ask Max anything, because today's his day. We're celebrating it because it's really the first time I ran into Mark. It was I was amazed. Mark, to tell you the truth, I can tell you this, but you really inspired me to really buckle up. I don't think I've really made much in life. And I can see, I'm able, you know, I'm complete, I'm whole, let me use that word. And I've not really touched lives just the way you do, Mark. Maxwell, sorry. You've really touched lives. You're a blogger. When I went through your website, I think it's blindblogger.com, right?
.net.
Yeah.
.net.
.net, yeah. I saw people, their testimonials, how many shows you've done, things, so much credits, and I was like, wow. If a blind man has no excuse, what excuse do I have? And it's really touchy, because I know this show, it's to inspire someone out there that think he's a loser, he or she is a loser or can't do it. Like when I found Wynn, I just had to cut short her achievements today. She really has a tremendous achievement. And if Wynn could do it, why can't we that are able be able to do it? What really amazes me is how we chat on Facebook. And it comes down to asking you this question. Maxwell, Max, how do you communicate on Facebook?
Well, as it really depends on who you ask, because you know, with you, we've had no breaks in communication using Facebook Messenger. You know, I've been able to get the links from your messages and send you emails where needed, or connect with you on StreamYard like we're doing today for the second time. But there are other times where communicating on Facebook is just not enjoyable. So I sometimes get a little slow at responding to messages. As far as posting on Facebook, a lot of it is just using the Facebook notifications, which sometimes becomes a pain in the butt when more than a few of your friends are doing things at the same time and your phone is constantly, you know, vibrating or pinging, telling you that you've got new notifications. But on the other side, it keeps me from spending more time on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, so that I can basically only go there when I absolutely need to go there and try to avoid those Facebook rabbit holes where, you know, you go to your profile and you're there for 30 seconds and then you look up later and you were there for 3 hours and you haven't accomplished anything. So, you know, I do my best with Facebook. It's not my most favorite platform because it's constantly changing. It is the most variable of all the social media platforms. And when you access the internet by a screen reader, which is what I do, I use a VoiceOver on my Mac. And I'm soon to be getting a Windows computer, so I'll be using JAWS for Windows on that one. And so you have a limited number of ways you can find text on a screen or that you can read the text once you find it. And so whenever they change the location of a link or whenever they change the order that you do stuff in, like adding a video or posting a new thread, it's like a scavenger hunt or a treasure hunt. You have to figure out, okay, it's not where it was for the last 3 months. Where did they put it? And as an example with Twitter, when they moved the new tweet from the top of the screen to the bottom of the screen or the middle of the bottom of the screen, it was several hours before I finally realized that, no, my computer wasn't broken. They just moved the darn button, and stuff like that happens all the time when you access the internet with a screen reader. So it takes a lot of patience, a lot of just trial and error and continuous repetition to access social media or anybody's website when you can't see it and you're depending on a screen reader. So but I think I do pretty good. I probably do as good as other people. And I probably don't get in near the emotional state that some people do using Facebook because, one, I can't see some of the stuff. So, and I have a positive attitude. So if there's some doubt as to the message of the person that posted it, I will usually assume, well, he meant to say something else. It just didn't come through in the text that way, you know? So, a lot of times when people start to create a negative thread, I will just say something calm and reasonable, which is the way my daddy raised me. He always said a gentleman never has to raise his voice or cuss at somebody to get his point across. So a lot of times if you just if I just respond to somebody's getting heated with you know, a calm, rational reply, or, you know, ask them if I'm understanding them correctly. And, you know, sometimes if you just break the circuit like that, you can avoid one of those feuds where people who used to be friends are no longer friends on Facebook, and or worse yet, they're no longer friends in real life either. Mm. And I have friends who like to use that passage from I think it's 1 Samuel, where he talks about how God sees people's hearts. And a lot of people have said that I don't get distracted by what the eyes would tell me if I could see. And I think that that probably applies a little bit to Facebook, because, you know, some of that, you know, the emoticons, the GIFs, the capital letters are even lost on me. You know, it's a lot of that stuff just doesn't affect me the same way it does other people on social media, because quite a bit of it is lost in translation between the text and the screen reader.
Max, if I could just jump in, I hope that's all right with you, Mike, and everything, Brother Mike, and ask a question. One of the things that I noticed when I was reading up about you, Max, was that you come from a family of carnies and circus folks. And when I think of that kind of culture, I think of those as being some of the most universal and peaceful people in the world, and definitely kind of a very much an ideal of what democracy should be like, because they definitely have a lot of different kinds of folks of different backgrounds, including some folks that some folks might consider different in a lot of different ways and everything. So I was wondering, did that impact your attitude and everything kind of growing up in that environment as much as your disability? And I even hate using that term disability, but it seems to me that where you grew up also impacted you. And I was wondering if you could reflect on that.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. I grew up, I didn't have a lot of experience with people in the circus world earlier in my life. I've had quite a bit of experience with them since I started helping people sell used amusement equipment, because I was smart enough to realize that not just carnival owners needed concessions equipment and generators and ticket booths. So I felt like I needed to get to know the circus people better. Before that, the only time I'd ever been around a circus was one winter. We traveled with a one ring circus in the Valley of South Texas, which was kind of an experience, being a ride owner around the circus. But, I grew up, our family, we moved out of the city of Houston when Houston first started to get a little rough for my grandfather's liking. And so we had, five families living on about 7 acres out in these, what they called it suburbs, but it was really like used to be farmland. It was way out of the city. So, you know, we were kind of insulated from the rest of the world being in a family that didn't outside of school, and school only lasted about 8 months out of the year. Outside of school, it was pretty much just us. And then when the school was out during the summer, we would travel with the family. So then we were encouraged to kind of stay away from the townspeople, because my dad always felt like when you hung out with the kids from town, always something bad was probably going to happen. If it did, you were probably going to get blamed for it. So I think kind of an insulated thing. It was kind of us against the world. And I was lucky that I grew up with a guy who, you know, I like to call my dad a showman philosopher, because he seemed to understand a lot of the important lessons. And I was lucky enough to get to spend many thousand miles in trucks with him to learn from him. But I think the fact that we were different, kind of separated from other people while still living with other people, it probably did affect me. And I think you kind of grow up with the attitude that you got to be on your best behavior. People are automatically going to assume less than the best about you. So you don't ever want to give somebody the excuse of thinking that, you know, that you're just another carnival owner. My dad used to have an expression. He said, Max, you have a choice. You can be a carny or a showman. You always want to aspire to be a showman. And I've done my best to listen to him. When we went to school, we did our best not to get in fights and to pay attention to the teachers most of the time. So, yeah, I think maybe not directly, but I think definitely by implication that affected us. And then, like you say, you're around so many new people every week during the season. You have to work with people of all walks of life, so that probably does make you more tolerant of people in general.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking. No, I think Wynn had a question.
Yeah, I think so. Wynn?
I was going to say that most websites, you guys, are, and I need to flash this when I preach now, because most websites are not handicapped accessible, and I know this because I've interviewed Max twice. I got the privilege to see Max speak the week before the pandemic. Max and I were at a podcasting conference together the week before the country shut down. And I just want to say that for those of you that think having cerebral palsy is difficult and functioning online, Max, I don't know how you do it. You seem to function online better than me, because I don't know how you do it, because most websites, you guys, are not handicapped accessible. They don't have the handicapped placard on the websites. Only a couple websites I have seen. YouTube or Amazon isn't handicapped accessible at all. Amazon is bad, and we'll get to that still in a minute, but I would think that a lot of people should be making websites handicapped accessible, like YouTube, like IMTV, because more and more with myself now on IMTV, more and more these people are going to be coming to IMTV, like Max. And so I think we need to make it universal design.
Well, I appreciate that, Wynn, and I agree with you. There's a lot of problems with a lot of the sites, especially some of the bigger, well-known sites. And when people ask me about accessibility, and I tell them I can only speak to using a screen reader. I cannot speak about people who use large screen magnification, like my friend Amy Bovaird from Pennsylvania. You know, I cannot speak to people like Wynn who are in a wheelchair and have diminished motor capacity, so that the websites need to be made where they cooperate with devices other than keyboards. I can't speak to that. But when it comes to using a screen reader, and people always ask me, Max, what is one thing you'd like to tell people about accessibility for the internet? And it used to be sure to add those alternative text tags to images, buttons, and links. And a lot of people are starting to do that. Thankfully, Facebook and some of the social media people are starting to use their algorithm power to automatically describe images. So what I'm starting to tell people now is, if you really want to make things better for the blind visitors to a website, try to limit the number of items on a page. The less stuff I have to navigate before I find the thing that I need, the more likely I am to go to that thing that I need and then spend more time on your website. And as a guy who used to have to hand code HTML to build his first website, I understand that, you know, having websites just like having a Carnival Midway. You want to keep them on the Midway as long as possible. You want to keep them on the website as long as possible. So the easier you make it for people that visit your site, the longer they're going to stay there, and the better Google, Yahoo, and the other search engines are going to like it, and that's going to translate to even more people finding your website. And this is kind of like What I used to tell people about alternative tags is nobody listened to me until I started explaining to them that those alternative text strings are searchable by Google and would help people find their websites. And it's the same thing now with time on site. So there are 30 million plus Americans with vision loss, and that just counts the ones that have been diagnosed and are either losing significant amounts of vision or have been determined to be legally blind. That's almost 10% of the U.S. population that are considered to be visually impaired. And all of those people are potential customers. And how do they find you? They find you through their website. And something else to remember, since Corona, everybody has gone indoors. But for the most part, us blind people were indoors before Corona. So it's even more important to make your website enjoyable to the visually impaired community, because we're always, most likely, a high percentage of us is always going to be doing everything online. We're almost always going to find you by your website. And here's the most important thing about us. We may only make up 10% of the population, but we are one of the most loyal customer bases that you can imagine. If we feel like you produce a good product or service and you're willing to go out of your way to make us feel welcome through accessibility, we will stay with you, even to the point of overpaying for your product or service compared to your competitors, if we believe that you care about us and have invested in us.
True. Mike?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just wondering. Wynn,
you want to say something?
Okay, no, Wynn, do you find that that's the same sentiment in your community as well, that your community is loyal to vendors, Wynn?
My community, cerebral palsy, is loyal to vendors. I mean, if I find something that's handicapped accessible, I will use it to the 10th degree. I will use it till wheels fall off, because I also find the same thing. And as I think I told you guys this before, if you are looking for a assistant, let's say, or a marketing assistant, or someone to help with your accounting, think about hiring a disabled, because as Max said, they are we're loyal to accessibility. We're also loyal to a job. I mean, now with COVID, Max and I are staying home more likely than we ever did because we're at high risk, but we can do stuff online, like there's no tomorrow. Online has opened up a whole new door for the disabled, and especially during COVID, because they know the skills of the Zoom, they know the skills of StreamYard, they know the skills of podcast hosting before anyone else did.
Wow.
Yeah, I agree with Wynn on that. As employees, we make very good employees because we generally show a lot of gratitude to the work and loyalty to the employer.
So, Max, what are your challenges? Especially in blogging.
I think my real challenge is I just want to create more content than I'm physically capable of creating. I almost feel an obligation because, you know, lately most of my posts are either about interviews I've done where I've shared my story on somebody's podcast and I want to drive traffic to their website so I can show my gratitude for being on their show and help people find that other person's work and hopefully introduce them to a new inspirational or motivational voice that will encourage them in the future. The other posts are about my own show, What's Your Excuse, where I've interviewed amazing people. And I feel like man, I should be releasing a podcast episode every day. And I'm like, no, Max, you can't do that. That would not last. So I would say, if anything, it's just a feeling that I'm not doing enough as a blogger or a podcaster, and that I really could be doing more to share people's stories and get them out there in the world. And because one of the saddest things that I run across is say somebody like Wynn or somebody with any other type of physical challenge who has written great content and nobody's looking at it. That, you know, hurts me on an emotional level. So that's probably my biggest challenge, is balancing my desire to share more with, you know, the restraints of my body and what I'm physically capable of as far as generating content. And I say that, and then after that, it's just the usual, you know, just the usual headaches of navigating websites as a blind person, you know, the WordPress dashboard to create posts and reply to comments, the social media pages where you got to let people know that you just released a new post. I used to struggle with my email provider because I have an email newsletter, but thankfully they finally released an option where whenever I have a new post up, it automatically goes to my entire mailing list. So that's one of those things that's really helped. And so I don't have trouble getting guests for my podcast, because half the time when I finish doing an interview on somebody else's show, they're like, Max, can I come on your show? So that's not a problem. And finding opportunities to share my story isn't a problem. It's just a matter of doing the work. And that's the way it is with a lot of stuff. A lot of blogging and podcasting, live streaming, a lot of that is not difficult. It's just not fun or entertaining. You know, it's like, what is it in the police dramas or the detective fiction, they always say that for a police officer, it's like 10% life-threatening chaos and 90% boring drudgery. And sometimes that's the way it is with a blog. You know, it's like the release of a new blog post. That's 10% that is, wow, we've done it again. And then the other 90% of it is social media, email list, comment moderation, making sure the website doesn't break, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I guess you'd say my challenges are really no different than anybody else's challenges with a blog or a podcast. The only thing is they're aggravated by the fact that I have to do it with a screen reader. And I think I overcome that in two ways. One, with patience. Over the years, my vision has taught me patience. And I also believe that patience is a fruitage of the spirit, and that that a lot of my patience also comes from God. So that's been one thing. And the other way that I overcome this, and you know this from our recent experience with your show this week, the other way I overcome this is by bringing other people into the experience, the adventure, making other people part of the story. So for those of y'all who weren't able to see it, y'all missed an amazing interview or conversation with Michael and my friend Lorraine Regularly from wordingwell.com. She is my editor. She has helped me publish my books, including the first one, which she had to talk me into publishing because I still didn't think it was good enough. So people like Lorraine have helped me along the way, and they continue to help me now. And that's one of the other ways that I overcome the disadvantage that I have from trying to run an online business without sight.
Now, one of the things that I've learned is that you've had some amazing guests, and you've definitely talked to a lot of folks in your podcast and everything. So I was wondering if you could share with our listeners here on IBM.TV some of the stories that you learned very important lessons from on your show. Because like I said, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm hearing that you've had some great guests. So I'd love to hear some of the lessons that you learned from some of your guests.
Sure. One of my most recent guests, Shay Sparks, she shared with me an exercise that she did when she first started overcoming the effects of living with an abusive father and, you know, a woman who just had everything go against her in her early and middle life. She's now an amazing, she calls herself a a fearless living coach. And she shared with me an exercise where you look into a mirror and say things about yourself. And she recounted how she had did it, where she talked about loving herself. And so I just took her lead, which is one of the things I often do in my podcast, is I will often share my own experiences or my own take, or sometimes I'll work through an exercise with a guest. And so I said, you know, one of the places where I feel challenged is in my singing ability. People always tell me that I sing really good and that I have an emotional effect on anybody who hears me. But it's one of those things, when I was a teenager, people made fun of my voice and I stopped singing for a while. So it's one of the things I really have problems having confidence in. And so we did that exercise and I started saying things like, you know, Max, you have a voice people enjoy hearing. You affect people emotionally. You sometimes make people cry. Your voice is every bit as much a part of your story and why you're inspirational as anything you say, those sorts of things. And I recorded some me singing some new covers that night. And when I posted the first one, several people who know me well said, Max, you sounded more confident when you recorded this song than before. And these are people who have heard me at different points during my podcasting and speaking journey and have heard me sing multiple times. So that's one of those guests who, you know, she had an actual immediate effect on me. Lorraine, of course, because there's a woman who not only survived being raped, but she survives to today living in the same town as the guy who raped her, who was never prosecuted for it. You know, the strength that woman has is an everyday inspiration to me. And she will tell you I inspire her. And that's one of those things, I just don't get it. I don't understand how I could inspire her, because to me, she's one of the strongest people I've ever encountered. A long time back, I had Michael Schwartz on my show, and he's an award-winning journalist that's losing his vision. And at that time, I was fixing to go off on my first trip to New York, and I was really hoping to chronicle the trip, maybe even turn it into a documentary. So I'm interviewing Michael, and I go, Michael, you're a filmmaker. You're losing your vision. How do you get such great video? And he said, it's simple. You get good equipment. You start with the widest angle lenses you can find, and you record as much footage as you can record, or take as many photos as you can take. He said, and then you let somebody help you fix it in post-production. He said, because you can, if you get an, you know, he said, it's because if you start with wide angle images, you can always edit that down to where you find the best frames or the best parts of frames. And the same thing with photos. If you take enough photos, you can always eliminate the four out of every five that aren't good and get one that you can do something with. And so that was a great thing. And I took it with me to New York. I basically, whenever I was somewhere I wanted a photo, I would just hand my little DSLR camera to somebody that happened to be handy, and they would take some pictures. They would usually take three or four pictures instead of just one. I got back home, I had 300 photos. We ended up with 62 that made it into the book. And when people look at those photos in that book, they're like, Max, the photos are a better story than the story you wrote about the photos. So those are a few examples of people who've been on my podcast. And I personally have an opinion about guests and hosts, and I could be totally wrong about this, but this is how I feel about it. This has been my personal experience with it. If you are a host of an interview show and you finish your 20, 30 minutes or hour or however long you talk with your guests, and you haven't had at least one aha moment for yourself, then you need to quit podcasting because you're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
True.
And I would thoroughly agree with that. And I've actually hosted quite a few shows and here on IBM.TV. And I agree that always have those aha moments, sometimes even with folks that I've known quite well, but then I learned something about them that I did not know during the course of the interview. So definitely I would agree with that. I think Wynn had another question that she wanted to say as well. So Wynn, I'm turning it over to you.
Okay. I agree with Max in his last statement. If you're not inspired by Max and myself and Buzzable, you said something in the intro that it shocked me about Max. I didn't realize this about Max the long time I know you, but I didn't realize. Did you, Buzzable, say that Max's dad passed away of lung cancer too? Is that correct, Max?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay.
And for
because
about...
Because the reason why I say that is because you and I have a connection that I didn't even know about. My dad also passed away of lung cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
That actually raises an interesting question, and it actually comes back to what Brother Mike's show is all about and everything. But to both of you, how important is faith to y'all? How important is having faith to y'all's journey and all of that? So I'd love to know your thoughts around faith.
I'm gonna let Wynn go first here.
Okay. My experience with faith and my experience and what I've come to find out about lung cancer, and Max, you can back me up on this, is that once you get stage 4, you literally die because they can't do anything for you and they can't do anything for your family member either. So what my experience with faith is my faith is very, very, very strong, and I am a woman of faith, and what I've been through in the past 10 years, I've also lost my mom. So what I've been through in the past 10 years without God or higher power, whatever you like to think about it, I would be on ground. I would literally be crawled underneath my desk in a ball. And because of what I had to go through back in April, starting March of last year, April, and then May, and then June was absolutely heck on wheels because it just snowballed. It just snowballed. One bad thing after another. And so that's, I am a woman of faith, but that's something that I would love to share, is that I am a woman of faith, which would literally put me on ground if I didn't have that faith. And that's all I'll say about that.
And Max, what about you?
Well, I like to say that my dad raised me from and pretty much taught me everything that I know. And he was not somebody who spent a lot of time in church, but somewhere along the line, he learned the important things of, you know, most importantly, the golden rule, which, you know, the ultimate commandment to treat other people the way you want to be treated, to put your brother or sister before yourself. So I grew up having faith without having a church for most of my life. I've been to a lot of different churches. In the 70s, there a lot of the Baptist churches were still teaching that if you had a disability, it was because you or your family sinned. So, you know, we weren't really around a lot of churches for a while then. You know, I got to experience Catholic masses because when you have a small carnival, you play church bazaars some of the time. So I've been to a lot of different churches. I've recently been baptized as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. I do my best to stay as close to the Bible as possible, realizing that as human beings, we're going to get some of it wrong, no matter what church we go to, no matter how much we study. And so at the end of the day, we just have to get down on our knees and pray for forgiveness and to pray for the strength to do it better tomorrow. And that's what I do. And the one thing I do know for sure is there have been literally hundreds of places along my journey, from when I had a carnival to when I first started my website to when I've traveled by myself. where I did not get to the next step, the next place, the next experience on my own power or on my own authority. It was through the grace of God. It was through prayer. It was through His Holy Spirit and the angels He's put in my path. And the great thing about God is He will use anybody in order to help somebody who's devoted to Him. And there've been many times in my life where, you know, the person He sent to help me wasn't exactly who I was looking for, but they were there. And so I knew that they were there because He sent them. And, you know, when you spend 15 years dragging a small carnival around the country, you know, you really understand how little strength you have, how little ability you have to change what's happening to you. You know, you really learn how limited you are in ordering your own steps when you do something like that for a living. And I'm not surprised when I hear that quite often farmers and ranchers and even, you know, other people like circus people, people who work in these kinds of occupations have sort of a simple faith and understanding that things are beyond their control. And for most of us, that means that we have to go to God and ask Him for His help. And we have to ask Him on a regular basis. And of course, we also have to remember that His wisdom is better than ours. And sometimes His plan is different than ours. And one of my favorite things that I like to tell hosts, because every host wants to know, Max, what are your plans? What are you going to do next? What haven't you done yet that you want to do now? And so I finally decided I'm not going to answer that question. And here's the reason I don't answer that. I tell them, you know, I would like to tell you what my plans are, but I've learned that God's plans are bigger than my dreams. So I'm just going to wait around to see what He wants Max to do next. And I really do my best to try not to live by my own will or decisions. I try to ask Him and to listen to Him and to try to do what He tells me is in my best interest going forward. And sometimes it's not easy to hear Him. Sometimes we just do what we want to do anyway. But usually when that happens, you end up in a mess.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Speaking of ended up in a mess, I would love to hear from both you and Wynn. How do you think the country is doing as well as the world in terms of access? Because, like I said, I'm oftentimes amazed at buildings that don't have the kind of access that they should have, and actually the transportation sites that don't have, because I'm a mass transit person. They don't have the kind of access that they should have. So, Max, you're the main guest. I'll defer to you, and then I'll come to a win. But how do you feel that we're doing here in the United States in terms of access? And then the other question I was going to ask is, I've heard different people that like the term disability, some like the word handicapped, even though I've heard some folks that don't like that word. So in y'all's mind, what is the correct terminology? So two questions, right? One about access and one about terminology.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. Is that Mike? I mean, what is your, I'm sorry, I forgot your
Mark.
Name, sir. Mark. Okay, Mark, I would like to ask you a question first. Okay. You're in the mass transit field. How do you feel that the mass transit companies are doing adjusting to Corona and people with disabilities? Because it's a very difficult thing to manage. I mean, I've read articles about how people who have white canes and guide dogs that are venturing out are being scorned by other people because they have difficulty following the lines, staying in the proper distances, that sort of thing. So how do you feel that mass transit people are doing when it comes to access for the people with disabilities?
Well, to be clear in everything, and I might have misstated it in everything, when I say I'm in the mass transit field, I mean that I am a user of mass transit, not necessarily one that is working in the field and everything. Right. But I do get around, and I do see what's happening in my community. And like I said, I've seen a number of buildings here in Durham, North Carolina, that don't have any access. So, and I've actually worked with a group called the Fayetteville Street Fellows, and that's one of the things that we've talked about is the lack of access for folks of disabilities and things of that nature. So I think that a lot can be done throughout the country personally, but y'all are have different disabilities, so y'all can speak to it more. Wynn with the cerebral palsy and the wheelchair, and you as a blind individual.
Right, right. Well, for me, I feel like when it comes to access, obviously, as a country, we're doing a much better job with wheelchair access and people who need walkers access. It's still not really, it's still not anywhere near what it should be, but I think we do a much better job with that than we are with access for people with vision loss. You know, even now, most buildings that don't have something to do with the medical profession, elevators don't have the auditory things that help you know what floor you're in. Most elevators do have Braille on the numbers, but, you know, being sure what floor you're on when that door opens is often a roulette wheel type of situation. And very few buildings have a raised line map anywhere. Very few buildings have posted anything on, or businesses have posted anything on the internet that would help a blind person navigate their business once they get there. Our mass transit equipment, you know, a lot of like the, like for example, in a lot of the big cities, they use kiosks for bus transfers and subway cards and that sort of thing. And none of those kiosks have speech on them, at least none that I've experienced yet. I haven't traveled as much in the big cities as I have to, you know, smaller cities, but I haven't run across much in the way. And as more and more businesses are going to kiosks to replace live bodies, it's going to get even worse, even though there's a federal law in the books that says if something has a screen, it's supposed to talk. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen. I'm starting to see more and more understanding with ATMs. The last couple of years, whenever I've been in a hotel, not only have their ATMs had the speech on them, but the hotel has actually had sets of earphones to give to me for using when I use their talking ATMs. So that's nice to see stuff like that starting to happen. And just a little bit of kind of trivia, I guess. If you go to any ATM in the U.S., they all have speech, including the ones at the drive-through lanes. And the reason why they have speech in the drive-through lanes is because the manufacturers did not want to have to build two ATMs. They wanted to build just one ATM and be done with it. So the ATM talks, even if you can drive. And then as far as what people call us, I know that for me, a lot of times it depends on the person I'm talking to as to what words we use, because I really don't have a preference other than I like to be honest about things. So I'm much more likely to say blind than visually impaired. I'm much more likely to say handicapped or disabled than physically challenged. But that's just me. I like the shorter, more honest, more direct language whenever you talk about anything. I like the old George Carlin routine where he used to finish by saying, if we still call PTSD shell shock, maybe more of our veterans would actually get help.
Mm. And what about you, Wynn, in terms of like the terminology and things of that nature? Like I said, I've heard different folks like different words.
The terminology, I don't mind disabled. I am starting to mind, and people just wanna don't face it. People just don't wanna face the elephant in the room. I'm starting to hear the term differently able, and it's driving me bats, because if you and Max, you love it, because if you call Max or I differently abled, you're not facing the elephant in the room, and you're not facing the blind blogger who can't see, and I won't use the old adage, it's the blind leading the blind, because for many, many years, I have had people call me when is disabled, and Max, you're as old as I am, or maybe even older. But this new term about differently able, do you like that terminology? No, we don't. Because you're not facing the elephant in the room. You're bringing us on and then calling us differently able. No, just call us disabled. Don't leave it out of the picture.
Max, she brings up a good point, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But one of the things I've always thought, and this is just my attitude, and Brother Mike has the same attitude, but I've always been of the opinion that most of us, no matter what our situation is, and by the way, I have a disability as well, even though most people wouldn't know it. I've actually got dysgraphia, which is a form of dyslexia, which means that like it takes a minute. Like that's part of the reason I don't drive is if you ask me to, which way is left and which way is right, I might be sitting there trying to figure it out for a minute because that's part of what dysgraphia is. But I mean, it's not as plainly seen as what y'all's disability is. But I would argue that most people in the world have a disability of one sort or another. I probably think that probably the majority of the population have some form of a disability. But that's just my opinion. What do you think, Max?
I did a podcast like 3 years ago with a couple of guys from Detroit that they just call their show In the Moaning. And they introduced me by saying that Max is going to help you eliminate the blindness that every single one of us has. And I always thought that was a great line because basically they were saying we all have a disability, whether it's a diagnosed disability or whether it's just something in our history that prevents us from doing what we know we were put here on earth to be doing. And so, dyslexia is a hard, in my opinion, dyslexia or dysgraphia, those are very difficult disabilities because you don't get the benefit of the glasses or the white cane. People just think you're slow. I mean, I'm sure many a time in your life, people wondered about your intelligence rather than wondering if you could read or not.
That's very true. Yeah, you're very true about that and everything. And actually, I was diagnosed late in life. I was actually not diagnosed until I was well into my adult years and everything. And I had actually gone through high school and college and all of that. And in hindsight, yes, I was probably only an average student. But part of that being a quote-unquote average student was because of that dysgraphia. And I'm sure that some of my professors were giving me what they considered was a decent grade without trying to even read my handwriting, because the handwriting can also be atrocious with dysgraphia as well. So they probably just gave up. They were like, we'll just slap a C or a B on the paper because we can't make out what he's saying in the first place.
Yeah.
But I think back to your original question, I think that pretty much everybody has something. You know, it could be an actual disability. It could be a what we're now starting to call an invisible disability. And it could just be your background, where you came from. I mean, it's interesting that people are starting to use this term systemic racism. And I'm starting to wonder about that term because, and here's why, I don't want to make nobody mad, but in my lifetime, I've had a lot of time to think about stuff and to ponder on other people's experiences. And I just have to ask myself, why can you take two people from the exact same circumstances? They both grew up in poverty. They both grew up in an area where nobody ever succeeded. And one of them does, and the other one doesn't. So, yeah, I'm sure that things are more difficult for a lot of people than they were for me, even growing up knowing I was going to lose my vision. But it really just comes down to those disabilities, those blindnesses, those handicaps that we have. Some of them are physical and can be diagnosed and treated. Some of them can be diagnosed and can't be treated. But some of them are just part of who we are because of how we were raised and where we grew up. And those are really difficult ones to overcome.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Well, Brother Mike, I was just wondering, as you've been listening to this conversation, sorry that I've been asking all these questions. It's your show, but I've been doing a good job of asking questions and things of that nature. But I hope you don't mind me asking a lot of questions. But one of the things I was going to ask you and everything was, how do you feel that folks of the disability community are treated in Nigeria? You are in Lagos, Nigeria, and things of that nature. So how do you think that is treated in the world community, and particularly in the African community. And even to come back to the systematic racism thing, and we can have a long discussion about that. I was also find sometimes that folks are, there's stereotypes even within that community, because I know a lot of times African-Americans have a stereotype about folks from Africa and vice versa. So I was just wondering if you could speak to the isms of the world and how you think things are going in Lagos, Nigeria.
Well, actually, in Lagos here, let me use Nigeria, though I'm in Lagos. Disabled people don't actually have that that platform to let me use the word operate, or they're not comfortable here. Like when you asked about access, access for the blind or for the disabled in Lagos, most buildings don't have that access for disabled to make use of, like the wheelchairs, the buses. Just recently, in Lagos, because I'm based in Lagos, some of the buses now have the platform, an access platform for disabled to be able to come into the bus. But let's leave Lagos. Let's talk about Anambra State, where I come from. That's my native town, where my parents come from. Though actually, Nigeria, if you're born, your native state of your parents is actually your native state. I was born in Lagos. Like the Americans, I ought to be called a Lagosian, but actually I'm not called a Lagosian. I'm called an Anambrarian, which is from Anambra State. So coming to Anambra State, they don't have that facilities for disabled to be able to use public buses or buildings. So it's really difficult for somebody that is disabled to have access. So talking about it generally in Nigeria, disabled are kind of, the disabled are kind of...
out of sight, out of mind?
Thank you. They're not actually recognized in this society. And that is why when I see people like Wynn and Max doing what they're doing, I'm like, wow. But I don't want to look at it as probably because they have the facility, because we'll say people in the US or in the Western world have that facility, have that opportunity, have that ground to be able to do what they can do. But I know here in Nigeria, we also have some blind people that are doing well. Like the school I went to a public school then, back in the days, is a secondary school, Dennis Memorial Grammar School, we call it DMGS. We had blind folks as mates, as schoolmates. And I remember meeting one of them. That's when I got to understand that blind people do read with brains. They call it brains, yeah. And they could type well. You understand? But that was the school I was able to find blind students. But when I was in Lagos, some schools don't have blind students in their schools and the public school. But they have schools for the disabled. They do. But like having them mixed with regular students, where regular kids, they don't have it that way. So, but having an opportunity to see them in the East, it helped me have this mindset of, oh, the disabled can also make it in life. They can also have that education background if they desire. I also know of a blind guy that went to university and he came out well first class. Do you understand? But now they are not even given the platform to work. So most of the times, you when you see a blind person or disabled person trying to hit it, like go further in education and the rest of them, you come and ask yourself, what platform has the government for these people? They don't have any platform for them. They don't even give them the opportunity to work. I'll tell you, 1% of them do. And probably the opportunity to have rich parents or opportunity to have someone they know that is in the government that could just place them there. But under normal circumstances, the blind, the disabled don't have a platform to really operate. And most of them end up being beggars on the street, being homeless, or being a liability to their family. Let me use that.
Right, and that's exactly the way it was in the U.S., you know, going back to the 20s and 30s here in the U.S. I mean, I've recently I had a friend remind me, he's like, Mike, you do know that when you sing, you're perpetuating a stereotype that all blind people are musically talented. And that goes by. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that, but I enjoy doing it. And it's part of my stuff, my thing, you know. But it does sound like the way the U.S. used to be, where if you had rich parents or if you knew somebody politically connected, you could get educated or you could get a particular job opportunity. And most of the people with disabilities were educated in state-supported schools for people with blindness or people that had, at that time, a lot of the people that were physically disabled, it had to do with polio. So, you know, a lot of those people were educated or were given government jobs. We've gradually gotten away from the strictly state school education of people with disabilities to what they call mainstreaming. But just to show you how things have changed, when I graduated from high school in 1984, my high school, which had 4,000 students and a graduating class of 750 people, I was the only blind person until I was a senior. When I was a freshman, there was a woman there who graduated. She was a senior the year I was a freshman. I was a senior the next time we had two blind people. He was a freshman. It was like, yeah, we had them in school, but we never had more than one or two of us at a time. It was almost like, okay, we've got our one blind person, we're done. And, you know, really it was just a matter of random chance and the fact that a lot of people were still being educated through the Texas School for the Blind as opposed to their local high school or junior high school. So, and I recently was reminded of those days when I went to this podcasting conference in Orlando called PodFest, and I was one of the speakers there. It was the first conference I've attended, and since I started traveling by myself in 2016, it's the first time I've been anywhere that wasn't specifically an event for blindness, where there was more than me as a blind person at the event. There were two of us at PodFest. And that was out of 1,800 people. So it's even now in certain arenas, we're not all that well represented. But at least we're no longer having to subsist being paper boys and piano tuners and, you know, beggars, people playing, you know, street musicians, those sorts of jobs. At least, you know, now we have technology, we have the internet, we have college educations of our choice. So we've come a long way, but I was glad you brought up this topic for one very important reason. I am not really a political person. I don't consider myself an advocate for blindness. I'm a guy who happens to be blind, who shows up and is doing his best to encourage others. But I hear every day I hear the news people talking about how many people have lost their jobs, how many Caucasians have lost their jobs, how many African-Americans, how many Hispanics, how many Asians. They never talk about how many blind people or people with disabilities that have lost their jobs, much less talking about the fact that as a group, I don't know about people in wheelchairs, but as a group, the unemployment rate among the visually impaired is 75%. That was pre-corona. That means that only one in four visually impaired people in this country are employed, and that includes people who are self-employed. And that was before corona. I mean, that's 75%. Plus, here's something else the majority of the public doesn't realize. There is a 1930s law on the books in the United States of America that allows employers to pay the blind less than minimum wage.
Wow.
The idea, yes, wow. The
that's
idea.
That's crazy.
Yes, it is crazy. And the various blindness groups have been advocating to Congress to change it for years, but Congress refuses to. And the reason they refuse to is the companies that hire the majority of blind workers, you know, these regional places where they manufacture products and those products are then sold to support those institutions, those people have more lobbying power than the visually impaired groups do. And the interesting thing about the law is it goes back to the Depression when nobody had jobs. And the theory was if we make it where they can pay the blind less than everybody else, they will hire more blind people. Well, almost 100 years later, they still aren't hiring more blind people. So obviously the law isn't working for the most part, but Congress has yet. I mean, it gets through committees and it gets votes, and they talk about it making progress all the time. But we still have a law in the books that allows employers in the United States of America to pay the blind less than anybody else making minimum wage.
Hey, Matthew, I can ask you this, and I mean, I know we didn't necessarily want to get politically motivated and everything, but it seems to me that some of these jobs, and then I know Wynn's got a question too, and I want to turn it over to Wynn, but it seems like some of these jobs are what amounts to sweatshops. Because like I said, I know that there are a couple of companies even here in Durham that are like where the blind go to work, like you're talking about, and things of that nature. So would you say that those actually do still exist in society, these kind of like sweatshop companies where they're trying to hire blind folks in order to work, and a lot of times they're in manufacturing jobs?
I couldn't disagree with you if I had to. In fact, Durham has one of the biggest ones in the country as far as hiring blind people to do, you know, production line, assembly line type work, and they do pay them less. So I don't know. I don't know that I can call something a sweatshop without visiting it and checking the working conditions, but they're definitely, I think, on the same level as when companies get stuff made at prisons. I think it's in the same territory. I don't know enough about what makes a sweatshop to call it a sweatshop, but you know, the old line, does a prison have to have bars kind of a thing. So I'm going to say you're probably right. Now, I do want to mention one very positive thing in this area, because I was lucky enough to be exposed to it last year. There is a company in Kansas called Envisions, and they operate a place where they hire blind people to manufacture products, but they pay every single one of them minimum wage and above if they are in supervisory positions.
Wow.
They have their own research and development department trying to design future products to help the blind and people with low vision. They support college education among their workers. They are doing it right. It's called Envisions. They recently purchased the Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind, and their plan is to bring it up to their standards as well. I was lucky enough, I got to speak at their event last summer. It's called Level Up, and they do it every summer with visually impaired people in Kansas, Arkansas, and Missouri, and I think Oklahoma. And they bring these high school and you know, first-year college kids in, and they teach them about time management and social skills and grooming skills. They teach them how to have an interview, and I was there to teach them about grooming, tying a tie, shaving, elevator pitches, handshakes. That was one of my favorite memories, was teaching people, well, how do you teach people how to do a handshake? And I was the one who had the bright idea. I said, it's simple. And this one was, of course, pre-corona. I said, when you go into a meeting, you just say, hey, when they introduce each other, you go, hey, can I shake your hand, please? Then when you put your hand out, you know they're going to put their hand out too. You don't have that awkward moment where either they put their hand out and you don't, or you put your hand out and they don't. So that was like one of my favorite moments of that one. But they put these events on because they don't want all of their students to end up doing manufacturing work. They know that a certain percentage of the visually impaired, that's the best job for them. Just like out in the rest of the country, a certain percentage of our population is not well suited for a job requiring a college education. That's just the way it is. But the ones that are capable, they want to teach them. They hope for better among the people that they work with across those four states. And their intention is to purchase some of the other of these places that hire the visually impaired and bring them up to the standards. And it was one of those events. I went there to speak. My stylist, Chelsea Nguyen, who was the one who explained to me that as a public speaker, I really needed to care a little bit about my image. And she really, really helped me so much to understand the importance of presenting an image, and then to teach me how to do it on my own without any sighted assistance. So Chelsea Nguyen at cenvisionimage.com. I have to get her name and her website in. Otherwise, I will feel ungrateful. And that's something I try to avoid doing. The thing that I remember is, you know, I talked earlier about how when you have a podcast and you're hosting, you should really have aha moments of your own. I spent a week out there teaching these kids about social skills, and those kids taught me, they reminded me, you know, Max, there's some things in your life you're making excuses about, and you need to cut that stuff out, because if these kids can see themselves in aerospace and electrical engineering and culinary arts and music production, they can see themselves in all these very challenging professions where people are going to tell them no all the time, then you need to go back to Houston and do better.
Makes a lot of sense. I think that it's going to, Wynn had a comment or a question as well, so I'm going to turn it back over to Wynn.
There's a huge difference between equal opportunity employment and saying we'll just hire a disabled person for the sake of hiring a disabled person. The reason why I left the education field is not only because of what's going on right now, it's because I didn't feel useful in my job. I didn't feel useful. I felt like I was a paperweight, to be honest with you. And so I think that employers, once we do go back to work, I think that employers need to quit using the disabled as paperweights, because as Max said, and as Monk, you said, a lot of these sweatshops are using these disabled and these people of different backgrounds, whether it be religious or colored backgrounds, as paperweights. So I don't like that. I don't like the term of let's use these individuals as paperweights. Let's not make them useful. When I emailed my ex-boss to say, do you want me to come in? Do you want me to mask up? Do you want me to come in and say goodbye? He goes, no, we don't have a plan. My response to him was, bye, guys. I'm going to a land, journalism land, where I'm loved. And so the paperweight aspect has got to stop. And I'm saying that as a now proud host of IAM TV and the paperweight. That's why I want to kick off Monday morning at 7 a.m. with the Women's Empowerment Network, won by yours truly here, because the paperweight aspect has got to stop.
No, I agree with you. I've got a couple of fun questions, because we said we're going to have some fun on here as well. So I've got a couple of fun questions that I want to ask as well, because we're getting ready to wrap up. I think we got 8 minutes to go. But one of the fun questions I was going to ask is, and somewhat serious, but it is a fun question, is I know that kids all the time are, you know, they've put on the bandanas, the blindfold and everything, and they're told that that's going to give them experience of being blind. That seems to me a short-sighted way of trying to learn about blindness. So I was wondering what your thoughts are when you see young kids that put on either the blindfold or whatever, and they're trying to get that experience of being blind. You don't see that many kids going around, scooting around in a wheelchair, because that's not even thought of as a thing to do. But definitely you always see the kids with the blindfold.
They do it too.
I've done that one myself, man. I mean, I was at a training center where they had several people in wheelchairs, and it was like everybody had to do it at least once. I mean, but you know, I think it is, I personally can see the humor in it, can see that it's part of kids being kids, as long as they don't, you know, take it to extremes, just like anything else. Something can be funny once, annoying the third or fourth time, and offensive the 10th or 11th time. So I can kind of get with, I think that if you see somebody doing that, the best thing you can do is, one, is to talk to them, try to have a conversation about what your life is really like. Another thing you can do is they make these glasses or goggles you can put over your head, face, and they will actually simulate various types of vision loss. like diabetic retinopathy, where your vision is haloed with pink, or like glaucoma, where you start to have the wavy effects in your vision. You know, so they actually simulate. I don't generally get upset about this, but my stylist Chelsea, who I mentioned earlier, she gets really perturbed when she sees people doing the sightless or blindfolded, putting on of makeup. And she's like, that could be such a positive, empowering thing. And, you know, they're making a total joke. So it really just depends on the person. I think you probably can tell by me at this point in my life, it takes quite a bit to offend me to the point that I'm going to be upset about it. But it really just depends on the intent of the other person and how far do they take it, you know?
I was going to find out what Wynn's thoughts were as well. But if you had more thoughts on that, Max, go ahead.
I was just going to mention one other thing that's been kind of fun has been the whole dining in the dark movement where, you know, people gather in restaurants sighted and blind and eat in the dark so that everybody has the same disadvantage.
Wow. And what's your thoughts on that, Wynn, when people I don't see as many people get into wheelchairs, but you're right. Sometimes folks will get into a wheelchair and run around like as if they have that disability or whatever. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think I agree with Max. I think as long as they don't do it to the extreme, they allow to do it. But it's easier to teach people firsthand what not to do. And I will say this loud and clear, and I will get off my soapbox. Do not pull into a handicapped accessible spot, or do not block the curb cut when we're talking, when we're getting on and off a bus, because it would not be helpful for Mark you to trip over the curb because you can see, you can think where's the curb because of your dysgraphia. And thank you for telling me that. And Max, it wouldn't be helpful when you're in a white cane situation for you to try and figure out where the curb is. And I know I have seen this with my first hand. I know that Uber drivers are getting really, really good at, because when we both left Podfest, which for those of you who haven't heard of Podfest, go look it up. Go look up the amazing Chris Comenzos. Shout out to him and the work he's doing, not only with the able-bodied, but the disabled. But my point being was we had another gentleman there, David, who was also legally blind. And Max, I think you need to work David up with these guys. But I noticed an Uber driver saying, David, I'm here to pick you up. I'm here to help you. What do you need? And David walked over to the Uber and hopped right in and said, thank you very much. So I think these Uber drivers and Lyft drivers have got to be a little bit more conscious of the wheelchairs and the white canes and the seeing eye dogs, because we all have aids, we all have assistance, and they can't just look at aid, or they can't just look at a white cane and just sit there and be. Now, I know it's a difficult trick with COVID, but they can't be, and I hate to be blunt, but I'll call it like it is. They can't be totally oblivious. They have two eyes. They can see the aide struggling with the wheelchair. They can see the aide. They can see a blind person struggling with the white cane not to fall over, and they can, but they can't be totally blind and oblivious. No pun intended. No pun intended. And now I'll get off my soapbox.
No, you were doing a good job, and actually, you know, one of our founders was actually enjoying you being on the soapbox, because Kimberly was saying that you could stay on the soapbox, and that she loves it when you're on that soapbox. So she was definitely enjoying what you were saying and all that. But I could also relate to what you were saying as well, because I remember being a older, middle-aged, single person. That I remember there was a young lady that I was dating that actually had that handicap sticker, and I remember a couple of times having to chat her because she would stick that handicap on the dashboard and everything, even though it was plain that she was not handicapped. So I've known a couple of folks that like that. I've also got a good friend that does have a disability that does use that handicap sticker, but he is legitimately handicapped because he's a heart attack survivor, a stroke survivor, and definitely has some other disabilities as well. So I can relate to on both sides. So I have seen folks that have tried to do the fake out and everything of that nature. I know we're getting ready to wind down, and I'm getting ready to turn it over to Brother Mike. But the other question I was getting ready to ask you, Max, as we get ready to wind down, and this was another kind of serious but silly question, is what kind of things did you learn in that carnival life? Because I know a lot of folks that are watching now are always about and excited about carnival life. They think that it's a kind of romantic thing and all of that. I know a number of folks, both young and old, that have always been like, I wish I could join the carnival. So what are some of the things that you learned in the carnival life that you would love to share with our audience? And then I'll turn it over to Brother Mike to wrap everything up.
Okay, I'll be happy to answer. I was, when Wynn was talking about people with the wheelchairs, I'm thinking if somebody wants to act up and sit or ride in your wheelchair, take them to the stairs and tell them, okay, you want to play with the wheelchair? Now get your butt up to the door. And we'll see how much fun you think you're having. That's just the kind of stuff that occurs to me sometimes when I'm having a conversation. But I think one of the things I learned in the carnival business, especially with my family not having a big corporate carnival like you're seeing more and more of, is you basically learn that people are not all that interested in you personally. They really don't care if you are sick, if a piece of equipment is broken, if the last week, the town you were in before this week, they didn't spend any money on the amusements. All they care about is can you get open, and can they ride the Ferris wheel or the Tilt-A-Whirl and buy their bag of cotton candy or a funnel cake on Thursday or Friday night? So you learn from an early age that there isn't much time for feeling sorry for yourself. You're probably never going to have the resources or money or equipment that you would like to have, but somehow you just have to make do. You have to find a way through your current situation or circumstances and get open. You learn a lot about adaptability and flexibility. And unless you grow to the point where where you're talking about 15 or 20 or 25 rides or more, you don't have a lot of room for pride or for shame when it comes to your personal needs. I have mentioned this in a couple of my books now. When we traveled, there were weeks where the first two or three days in a new town, you didn't have water, sewer, or electric for your house, for your trailer. That has happened. And you still have to go through the activities that you go through to get the rides and games prepared to open and not worry so much about being dirty and greasy and not smelling so great. That's just one of those things you learn from an early age. And I think it really has helped me in real life because, you know, I'm not so attached to my personal comfort, and that extends to my emotional comfort. I've recently accepted the fact that I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. And a lot of that comes from spending 15 years, you know, trying to figure out a way to get a small carnival to next week, to the week after that week, and to the next month, the next year. So it teaches you flexibility, adaptability, creative problem solving for sure. And it just, I really think it teaches you perseverance, resilience. So not everybody has been where I've been. Not everybody comes from a family that's been in farming or ranching, which I think are very similar in the lessons that you learned growing up in those businesses. But just about everybody has been through trials, or they have accomplished something in their past that took extensive effort over a period of time. Regardless of what you think of your academic performance, the fact that you graduated from a high school, if you did, or that you have a college diploma, even if it's not in the field you're working in, is something that you need to be proud of, because it took extended effort over a long period of time. One of the things I like to look back at that has nothing to do with the carnival is the fact that I'm one of the few blind Eagle Scouts. It took expended effort over 4 years with a lot of help from a lot of great teachers and scout masters and other scouts in my troop. So most people, if they haven't, you know, lived my life, they have done things that they should be proud of, or they should at least be able to look back at and go, I learned X, Y, and Z from doing this. And, you know, for women, it could be the birth of a child. It could be when the child first goes off to school. And there's so many times along that path where a disaster could strike, but somehow they made it through. It could definitely be a high school or college education. It could be starting a business. Even if you started a business in 2006 and it failed in 2008, it's so difficult to start and grow any business. And if you did it even for a little while, that's something you could look back on if you look back on it in the right frame of mind and use it today. So Robin Roberts was the first one I ever heard say to make your mess your message. And I think that not only means your message to the world, but your message to yourself. And, you know, which is why one of the things I'm known for is being very honest in my blog posts and my podcast interviews, to the point several coaches have said, Max, I know your brand is authenticity, but could you be a little less authentic? So, but I share the stuff that's happened that wasn't what I wanted to have happen. I share about being, you know, broke and sick and fixing to be homeless in New York, but making it back home to Houston in 2018 because I had great friends who had built up over years, and they sent me the money to get me a room in a hotel and a trip back to Houston. You know, the bad news there was I was in a bad situation caused by my own doing, and really didn't know what was going to happen next. But, you know, thanks to great connections and a great community, I got home. And even though the trip was a failure, how many people out there have even one friend that they could call up in the middle of the afternoon and go, man, I'm in a real heck of a mess here, and actually believe that somebody is going to help you get out of it? So we've all been through trials, some of them as we were growing up, some of them in adulthood. Some people, it may seem like they've never had peace. But those things are the kind of things that teach us the important lessons: resilience, perseverance, how to find the positive when most people will see nothing but negatives, and really just making decisions, because that's what it comes down to. Every day we have important decisions to make, and we have to make them every day, because they don't get easier and they don't go away. We have to decide to find solutions. We have to decide to ask for help. We have to decide to be positive, or to find something to be positive about. And those are just a few that I talk about pretty often. So the carnival business taught me a lot of great lessons. And this is from something that eventually I was not able to sustain. I went out of my business. I lost a family business. But you don't hear me hiding the fact that I lost a family business, because I've learned so much from it, and so much from losing it, and so much from where I went next.
Yeah, looks like you learned a lot. I've got to get ready to turn it over to Brother Mike to wrap everything up. But I was going to let you know, as you can tell, the last time I was at a state fair, I won this. So definitely, you know, I won this at a state fair. So I was going to share that with you. You can't see it. I know that you're the blind blogger, but it's like an alligator. So it's one of those carnival games. I was at the state fair. We didn't have it this year because it was a virtual state fair, where if they did it at all. But like I said, I know they did not hold it in the regular sense. So definitely, that's what I won. And it was in one of those Carnival Midway game. So definitely, like I said, I know you can't see it, but it was not even the biggest alligator because it doesn't even cover up the computer screen and all of that. So I won a very small alligator. So brother Mike, on that note and on that laughter, I'm going to toss it over to you.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Max, it's good to have you on our show. Though I still have other questions, but I love it when Mark really asks you most of those questions, although they sound like the ones I really wanted to ask you. But I'll save the last question. But this question, to wrap it up, what's your win-win? Then I'll wrap it up.
What's my win-win?
Yeah.
I would say people talk about me being inspiring, but it seems like an endless number of people who continually come into my life and inspire me. Mm. I think because I put myself out into the world, other people put themselves out into the world. And I like to say you meet the people you expect to meet. And I spend most of my time expecting to meet great people like Michael and Wynn and Mark and Bill, whether that be in person or online. And for the most part, those are the people I meet. That's why when I travel quite often, people buy me food or charge me less for stuff at the hotel. You know, it just seems like stuff like that happens. But it's because, and I think really a lot of it is because I expect the best out of people. And, yeah, there have been times where they've disappointed me, but there have been far fewer times where I was wrong about people. And so I would say the win-win is put yourselves out there. Other people will do the same. You're going to meet some amazing people along the way. And even when things don't go exactly the way you want it to, you're going to have and the one to remind people about is there's an important quote in teaching where they say when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I like to remind people that just because it says a teacher will appear doesn't mean the teacher is going to look like a teacher. Quite often, the people with the most important lessons can be your garbage man. They could be my dad, who was a carnival owner. They could be lots of people who will come into your life, and they can change your life for the better. But only if you recognize that they are those teachers, or to borrow another expression, that they are those angels. And I've been blessed with so many. And I get up every day waiting to see who the next one that's going to come into my life will be. So I would say if there's a win-win, if you show the world your best, most of them will show you your best, show you their best.
Thank you. Thank you. Max, I hope to see you, more of you on the IBM TV, even if it's not on Mind Closed 101, probably on Podcast Thursday, other programs, hope to see more of you. And definitely, I know I'll bring you back on Mind Closed 101.
I appreciate you having me here. Like I tell podcasters all the time, if it wasn't for people like Michael who give me the opportunity to share my story, there wouldn't be a The Blind Blogger. There wouldn't be a What's Your Excuse. It's only because I had the opportunity to share my story that all this other stuff has happened. So thank you for the opportunity. Always love talking with you. Would definitely come back on anytime you want or need me to. And the only thing I like better than sharing my story is getting to connect other people and letting them share theirs. So for you and for any of the other hosts on IMTV, if you get in a bind and you need somebody to come on, just reach out to theblindblogger.net and say, hey, I saw you on Michael's show and I need help. And here's what I need. And if I can't do it, the odds are I know somebody who can. And that's really what I do for a living. You know, if people ask me all the time, what do? I connect people with opportunities. And it gives me great pleasure to connect them with people like you, Michael. This is an awesome show. You give people the time to really talk about important issues, and that doesn't happen on everybody's podcast.
Well, my executive producer said I should ask you this question about your book. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Okay. My latest book, The Blind Blogger's First Speaking and Signing Adventures, How You Can Conquer Your Fears, is the second in a series of three books about my solo travels in the country. This time it talks about when I went in 2017 and traveled to 6 cities in the eastern half of the U.S. to do public speaking and book signings. I share about preparing to go, how I started off going to do one event, and then people online started reaching out to me, and it became a tour. You know, I talk about the bad stuff like missing trains and running short of money, but I also talk about the great people I have met and the experiences that I had. And a lot of it is really just keeping your heart and your mind open to opportunities and possibilities. And they can find that. It's the Blind Bloggers First Speaking and Signing Adventures. The first book in the series is the Blind Bloggers New York City Adventures. And a lot of great pictures in that first book, along with the awesome story of really overcoming your fear, asking for help, asking for opportunities. And just to, I think the most important message in both of those books and pretty much in everything I do is we can pretty much accomplish anything we want to, but only if we're willing to take risks and put ourselves out there. Because quite often when I have traveled without the money most people would say they had to have. For example, when I went to New York in 2016, I had $400 on me over my rent where I was going to be staying. When I left in 2017, I had $500. You know, when I left in 2018, I had $400 again. It's because, you know, if we wait until we're ready, if we wait until things are ideal, we'll always come up with an excuse. And yeah, there've been times where I probably should have stayed home. But then I would have missed a heck of an adventure.
True. That's real true. But I see that we've got in our senior executive producer as well as one of the founders of IBM.TV with us. Kim Calhoun has joined us. I was actually behind the scenes pitching that you get your own show on IBM.TV. So definitely I'm thinking that that's what I would like to see happen and everything. I don't know whether you're available. I don't know. Well, Kim's got some spaces and everything, but I've been really impressed with you as a guest, and I know I'm going to reach out to you to be on my show. And definitely I would agree with Brother Mike that Podcasters Thursday would be great to have you on, as well as you are a podcaster and a blogger. But now I'm going to toss it over to the lady behind the plan, along with Nick and Ankit. So I'm turning it over to you, Kim. What did you think as you were sitting here being engaged in the conversation and learning about Brother Max?
Well, first off, I'm always moved by Brother Mike's shirts. The world just doesn't know how it opens up my heart to hear some of the stories of resilience, right, and overcoming the challenges in life. And when you talk about you only have $500, but sometimes the trip is worth it. I did the same thing last year. I kept saying, why not, right? Whether the IRS wants to allow me the deductions for doing the business trips that I felt necessary. The experiences and the learning, educational learning, the why not stands out, that it became important. Every one of them became important. And so I feel your struggle. Join, you know, us at IBM TV family. The door is always open. Brother Mike has brought us so many people. I feel like, you know, everybody he brings on, we end up doing a show with, and definitely not taken away from Brother Mike because he seems to get more people. But, you know, we're here to help people grow, but also bring awareness of all of these things. And we'll definitely expand more on your book. And Brother Mike, maybe you can help us do that, do another interview of the book. But these are the stories that people need to hear.
Yeah,
the stories of success, of triumph. I even wrote a book on what it takes. And, you know, everybody made me do it as what it takes to be an entrepreneur. But truly, all the elements are what it takes to be successful in life in general. And I spoke about the elements when I did the commencement exercise speech for North Carolina State University in 2018. And somebody said, you need to put that in the book before you go on a speaking tour. And I literally wrote the book in 6 weeks before the speaking tour. tour took place, because I felt it important of many of the things that you're talking about, right? You just got to get out there and do it. And sometimes you're going to fail. And you did one of the things that is probably the hardest thing for somebody to do is to admit, I got a problem and I need help. And what you'll find out is the most endearing thing in the world is that when you do ask for help, so many people out there are willing to help, right? And there are so many people out there who need help. Listen for that, right? And listen for the genuineness. And listen for that. It doesn't mean you have to help everyone, but sometimes connecting with people to the right people. I do that a lot. People will reach out to me on Facebook because of the TV show, and they'll say, I need help, and then I'll connect them. I might not speak their language. Like this one guy reached out. He was looking for his lost sister during COVID. I didn't speak his language, but I connected to him to someone who did that was able to relay to us what was going on. So Brother Mike does that too, but I'm going to hand the mic back over to Brother Mike. I want to thank Brother Mike for this wonderful show that brings me to tears almost every time I watch it.
Well, I just wanted to mention one thing to you, Kim. One of the things that I speak about most often and that I talk about when I'm interviewed on other people's podcasts a lot, it didn't come up today, but it usually does, and that is that I have become kind of the guy who's teaching people how to ask for help, and I talk a lot about the importance of interdependence over independence, as well as I have this expression that I like to share with people because I find if I can get them to take the focus off of themselves and put it on the other person, it makes asking for help or asking for opportunities much easier. And I like to say that when you refuse to ask, you rob the other person of the joy they would have received from helping you.
True.
I think Mike would agree with that. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
No, I strongly agree, because I remember when I had an issue. Let me just say it. I had an issue last week, the last episode before Max Owen, the guest I was expecting, disappointed me. And to be honest, I booked her a week before the day she finally disappointed me. So I was shocked. I was confused because trying to organize a show on the get a guest on that 4 days is quite not easy, because you need to talk to them, you need to send them emails and try to convince them to be on your show. But I was confused. I just looked, I remembered Max and I said, let me just ask Max for a little help. And I was like, Max, please, I know people get, you get paid for it, right, Max? People pay you for that.
Yes,
but I just said, oh, let me just ask him. Even if he charges me, I don't have money.
Oh, you mean I could charge the host too? Darn, I got to start doing that.
So, and actually,
I'll send you my PayPal link when we're through here, okay?
So, and his show was this week, and I need a guest before his show. I was like, whoa, what do I do? So I just asked him, and to my greatest surprise, he gave me two amazing guests. Two, but one was really booked, the one in UK, and Lorraine was ready, and she nailed it, she killed the show. Now the board had to ask me to give her another time again on my Closer 101. So really, asking, it really helps. It really helps. And I'm grateful to Max for giving me that lovely guest and helping me out when I really needed it. So, Max, thank you. Thank you, and I hope to see you in the game.
Right. Well, I thoroughly appreciate it. You know, this all comes back to what I try to teach other people by implication. If you want to connect with people, try to do something to help them. Try to solve their problems. And do it without any expectation of a thank you or of getting paid or getting coffee or beer. You know, just do it because it's the thing we should do for other people in this world, and good things will happen. And, you know, I was not surprised that Lorraine just, you know, totally killed it on your show, because I've had her on my show. I've heard her on other people's podcasts, and she, you know, she has a great story and the willingness to share it openly and sometimes with rawness that, you know, that as an adult man in the world, you know, makes me a little uncomfortable, but you know, it's all true. And it, by giving her a place to share those emotions and to teach those lessons, you know, we're helping a whole generation of people maybe. So I'm just very happy I could connect you with somebody who was perfect and also somebody who every time she shares her story, she's changing the world. And that's why I do this stuff. And oh, yeah, I do get paid for it. So we'll talk about that someday.
Thank you, Mike.
Does the network need a guest booker? Maybe we could talk about that instead of a show.
Yeah, sure, we can.
We'll talk about it.
We'll definitely do that. But I think it's time to wrap up.
I think it is too.
We have several shows, but I'll let Mike do the wrap.
Yeah. Thank you, Kim. It was nice meeting you.
Thank you. Same here, Max.
To all our viewers, thank you. I have exceeded my time, but because it's really a pleasure having Max on Mind Closet 101 on the IBM TV. So today I'll do the normal things I do know. This week there'll be no African proverb and no today in the history, so I'll just go straight. So don't forget to please follow me on my social media handles. That is Bronwa Chinemelu. That's the name there on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And for Max, just meet him on the blindblogger.net in case you want to follow him for advice, help, anything you need to know more about Max, you can meet him there. Let me just say, next show is Med Friday. So don't touch that dial, switch over to Med Friday. Just to give you a quick reminder of our shows, on Mondays, Economic Monday, radio talk show with Mark Lee, he's here. Yeah. That's the host on 2 p.m. Eastern Time, so don't forget. We're having a new program coming up on Monday. That's hashtag win with win. So try not to miss that. On Tuesday is World News COVID-19. Celeb Tuesday. And we also have Vivian China. So if you want to know more about Asian food, don't touch that dial. Just tune into her show on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Startup Wednesday is for new entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs. Wednesday is with Jeff. For those, he fights for the advocacy for weed. Just trying to cut it short. On Thursday, Sportscast Thursdays. On Friday, we have Financial Friday, Med Friday, and also Mind Closet 101. On Saturday, Spiritual Saturday, also Chess Stars with Sasha for chess lovers. We also have DJ Live on Saturday for music lovers. And Starry Saturday, also School of Economics with Sheriff. Don't miss it if for entrepreneurs as well. On Sunday, we have Super Sunday and the Alexandra May Cafe. If you still need more channels, don't forget to log into our website, ibm.tv, for more exciting, educating, motivational, and inspirational TV shows. Again, let me use this opportunity to say this. We have Family Dollar Store that happens to support PBS Masters. Please, I'll love you to go click on their website for affordable goods. The goods are really affordable. And if you order more than $25 or up to $25, we have a free shipping to you all over United States for now. So please don't forget to do that. And if you do that, you're saving $5 as well. And you're contributing to PBS show. God bless you. So I see you next time. Same station, same time. Mind Closet 101 signing out. God bless.